LLC versus Greater Omaha Packing Company, Inc. Mr. Walker, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Our office represents Appellants Meyer Natural Foods, LLC, and Crum & Forrester Specialty Insurance Company. And this case is about breach of a processing agreement, which occurred when, in April of 2011, Appellees delivered to Meyer Natural Foods' place of business known as Skylark E. coli contaminated beef. Now, just a quick factual outlay of this case. On April 24, 2011, Meyer Natural Foods delivered its cattle to Appellee's facility for fabrication and processing. On April 25, which was a Monday, the cattle were slaughtered. On April 26, they were placed in chill. And on April 27, the cattle were fabricated and delivered to Meyer Natural Foods' place of business known as Skylark.
Did the ownership of the cattle or the processed cattle ever change? Was it always in Meyer?
Yes, always, at least relevant to this transaction. Now, on April 28th, Meyer gets a phone call from Appellee, where Appellee asks Meyer Natural Foods to come over to its place of business so they can discuss the testing results for the cattle that were delivered the prior day. Upon arrival at Appellee's office, Appellee tells Meyer Natural Foods that 37 combos of non-intact meat from yesterday's testing came up tested presumptive positive for E. coli. And because of the significant amount of E. coli that tested presumptive positive on that day, this was, according to Appellee, an event day under law. Ultimately, this event day resulted in just under $1.4 million worth of damages to appellants, of which Meyer Natural Foods paid a $500,000 self-insured retention. Now, you'll notice throughout our brief, we've outlined a number of provisions that we believe in the processing agreement were breached. But one thing we want to make clear is that proof of any one of those breaches entitles appellants to recovery in this action. Specifically, with regard to the insurance provision for which appellants moved for partial summary judgment. By way of an addendum, on Appellee's letterhead and drafted by Appellee, the insurance provision was amended to state that Appellee will carry maintain insurance on Meyer Natural Foods cattle in the possession of Appellee in the amount of $1.8 million. There were no qualifiers, there were no exceptions, there were no permitted exclusions.
There were no qualifiers, but there's no explanation of what kind of property insurance either. It just says maintain property insurance. And didn't Greater Omaha Packing maintain property insurance?
They carried property insurance, but ultimately the property insurance was of no value because the United States District Court of Nebraska found that the damaged meat, which was contaminated with E. coli, was barred under a contamination exclusion.
Well, it had no value for this loss. It didn't have no value.
Correct.
It was property insurance.
Correct. Now,
if the plant had burned up while the cattle were there, property insurance would have covered it. Is that correct?
I believe so. I'd have to look at the insurance policy provisions, but I believe so. Now, with regard to whether that was permissible, which is the question that's being asked, whether it was okay to simply get property insurance with exclusions, we cited to you the Premier Health Partners case from Ohio.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Is there such a thing as property insurance without exclusions?
I think.
Does that exist in the universe?
Under standard policy, I would say no. However, in the initial agreement, that's what was to be carried was a standard policy of insurance, which was removed in the addendum to simply carry property insurance at $1.8 million.
And it's your position that maintain property insurance for purposes of Section 18 means property insurance without any exclusions?
Yes, and particularly the exclusions with regard to bacteria when that's has a high propensity for occurring in the processing of this, the nature of this business. Now,
Would property insurance cover E. coli? Isn't it true that the cattle come in with E. coli already in their system?
It is a naturally occurring bacteria.
So we don't know if this contaminated meat was contaminated by something, some other source of E. coli, or if it was just from the cattle and it was improperly processed. So would insurance cover that type of contamination?
We believe that it would. We believe that property insurance would have covered that absent bacteria and or contaminant exclusion. Now, the issue of when did the E. coli manifest, when did the E. coli transpire, to me, those are fact issues that should have resulted in overruling of summary judgment that was entered in favor of the appellees.
Assuming there's a potential for coverage.
I would say separate and apart from coverage. Insurance is one part.
Okay.
The other provisions, such as Section 10 of the agreement that has been briefed at length with regard to acceptance and warranties, that's another part. The warranties are a third part. And then there's an indemnity provision that states, to the extent of appellee's negligence, they will indemnify Meyer Natural Foods.
So under other theories?
Correct.
I beg your pardon. Thank
Correct.
You.
So okay. Insurance is in and of itself. If there is a breach of any other provision, it's our contention that we're entitled to recovery in those provisions as well.
Did you ever take advantage of the terms of the insurance policy that allowed you to mitigate your damages?
Did we mitigate our damages? I would say yes.
Did you ever take advantage of what the contract said, this is the way damages will be mitigated, or that you will be held whole?
In my estimation, we did by way of sending them to a cooker, eradicating the E. coli, and selling them for a reduced price.
Doesn't the contract call for you to return?
And that happened as well. The product was returned to GOPAC for those eradications.
All of the product?
Wasn't some?
Most, I would
dropped
say.
Dropped in a landfill?
Yeah, some went to the landfill because it was altogether too unhealthy to cook and eradicate the E. coli. But it was returned to Meyer Natural Food, or excuse me, to Appley. And in fact, the with regard to Section 10, whether there was or not notice of non-acceptance given within 20 days of delivery, the trucks at Meadowlark, which was the office of Meyer Natural Foods business, on April 29, 2 days after the event day, were sent back by Meyer Natural Foods to GOPAC, to Abilene, for reworking and retesting due to the suspicion that there was additional E. coli on this meat. If that's not notice of non-acceptance, I don't know what is.
Was the agreement between Meyer and GOPAC requiring property insurance ambiguous?
I would say, in my estimation, no. Because first off, if it is, it would be to be construed against GOPAC because that addendum was drafted by them. Okay. However, in my estimation, it is not ambiguous because the parties took the liberty of removing from their initial agreement a standard insurance policy, which, like has been asked, would contain exclusions. However, they moved it simply to put together an all-encompassing $1.8 million in property insurance. So I believe it's not ambiguous, and I believe, based on the Premier Health Partners case that we showed you, based on the Tag 380 LLC case we showed you in the property insurance context, that getting an exclusion that excludes coverage for bacteria, especially when you're dealing with meat, is a breach of the duty to procure insurance. And unless there's questions, I'll save the remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Coyle, good morning to you.
Good morning, and a very cold morning it is. May it please the court, my name is Mike Coyle, and I represent Greater Omaha Packing. Greater Omaha Packing entered into an unambiguous contract with Meyer Natural Foods to process their cattle. Meyer does not have their own processing facility, so we entered into a contract with them where once a week we would process their cattle, we'd harvest them, we'd fabricate them, and we did it once a week for 5 years. So for over a quarter of a million cattle, on 250 separate occasions, we had an agreement with Meyer, and it also had a built-in remedy. And the remedy was, is that this, we're talking about fresh meat. They had 20 days to give us notice if any of the product was non-conforming. And if the product is non-conforming, then we were obligated to buy back 100% of it. And it had a set methodology for doing it, some national term.
And the appellant contends that they ship back the trucks with contaminated food. Is that accurate?
Your Honor, I do not believe it was returned. I believe that it was brought to their facility and directly from their facility to the landfill for some of it. However,
some went to a cooker. Some went back to GOPAC for additional testing. Some went to the landfill.
That's correct.
Is that an issue of material fact?
No. And let me say why, Your Honor, is that in the 250 occasions, we exercised this remedy where within 20 days we would square up, they would pay us for the cattle, we paid them for the hides, but we basically had 250 separate agreements. Now, on 75 of those occasions, it's undisputed in the record, and to answer your question, these were the very first cattle fabricated that day. They all came from Meijer. And the cattle come in with the E. coli. It's on their hide, could be in their gut. So on that particular day, they came in, we processed the cattle, and then they're chilled, and then when they're getting ready to ship, we test them for E. coli. We do that every plant in the country. On 75 of the 250 occasions, there was some positive E. coli test. But remember, under our HACCP plan, which is Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Points, we have interventions. We pasteurize it, we steam it, we put different acids on it to eradicate the E. coli. And the very last part of our critical control program is to test it for E. coli. And if it's tested positive, all of the product that's shipped, the trim, is put in refrigerated trailers that are sealed. Those trailers can't be opened until they get the results back from the test. And if they test positive, the product has to be diverted. So the long answer to your question, Your Honor, is that 100% of the product, the trim, that tested positive was sent to a cooker and consumed. 100% of it. The reason I tell you this is on 75 of those 250 occasions, we had one or two positives or compo bins test positive. They're sent to a cooker, and we never had a claim. This was the second to last time they ever used our facility. Then they moved to Cargill. So they made a claim against their insurance company. So rather than exercise the remedy that they had under the contract, they made a claim against their insurance company, and that's why they mentioned Crum & Forster. So now a year later, Crum & Forster is coming back, trying to collect under a different contract, but they step into the shoes of Myers, and the remedy was within 20 days they needed to tell us, we would have bought back 100% of the product. Now, we have 19 USDA inspectors in our plan. And three USDA veterinarians. Greater Omaha Packing is a state-of-the-art facility. The USDA didn't issue any report. There was no problems. And to get back to the issue of insurance, if somebody would have said, hey, you have to insure us for E. coli, we would have never entered into the contract. Because the one undisputed fact from all of the experts, including plaintiffs, including ours, is that they've gotten really, really good at it. But they cannot completely eradicate the E. coli 0157H7 process from any processing facility in North America. So that makes the issue of the insurance an impossibility.
Was the contractual provision requiring property insurance ambiguous?
Absolutely not. And in fact, Your Honor, over the terms of the five-year engagement, they demanded and we provided a certificate of insurance. We gave it to him every single year. The problem here is just what his honor said is that there's never going to be insurance coverage for this, and no company could offer it because.
Can you? I'm sorry to interrupt. You say you had provided certificates or evidence of insurance.
Yes, every year
in the past. And did any of those policies cover E. coli?
Well, Your Honor, it was the standard property insurance that they requested, and. There are there are certain exclusions in any CGL policy. But yes, if the burn, if the building burned down, covered. If there was a...
But the question really is trying to focus on, was there ever any undertaking to insure against E. coli?
Well, the answer to your question is no. They didn't ask for a special policy that contained a provision that if there was a an E. coli positive test, that there'd be coverage for that.
But they didn't ask, but I'm looking historically because you referred to all of these preceding policies.
Sure.
So.
But, Your Honor, that happens every time at a plant. And the reason that there's no claim here is there was never adulterated product that got into the stream of commerce. In other
words, I guess that may be the fact, but I'm trying to sort of find out what was the custom in here. Were there policies that would have covered E. coli? Were there some in the past that did?
No. And in fact, we submitted an affidavit from the producer who indicated that the policy that we provided is the policy that's normally and routinely used in this industry. And
sorry to interrupt.
Yes. But
sort of springboarding off Judge Miller-Lerman's question, Section 18 in the original contract required that Meyer be added as an additional insured and as a loss payee, but I don't see that same language in the addendum. On the contract that covered the period where this occurred, was Myers added as an additional insured?
Yes.
And did they receive a copy of the insurance policy as an additional insured?
To the best of my knowledge, yes, because they were provided with the certificate of insurance each and every year, and I believe it was the same policy that was in force the whole time.
You say they were provided with the certificate of insurance. Were they provided with the policy itself so they could see what the exclusions were?
You know, Your Honor, I would like to say, to the best of my knowledge, yes, but as I sit here today, I believe that they were. Can I cite you to the line and verse in the record on that? I think that the key here...
Can you?
No.
All right.
But I think the key here is it goes back to the whole issue of E. coli is a naturally occurring phenomenon. And the HACCP plan at Greater Omaha worked perfectly. In other words, the cattle came through. We were able to discover all of them. And then they were sent to a cooker, and 100% of the cattle was, of the meat, was consumed. So it gets back to this whole issue. Yes.
Not in this case. Was
of all of the trim. Okay. All of the trim. And not to get into the whole issue of the intact cuts, Your Honor, but they had a remedy. They didn't give it back to us. We offered to rework it, which is routinely done, and they turned us down.
So let me ask you one more question.
Yes.
Did ownership of the cattle or the meat?
They were always Myers.
Always Myers.
Yeah, because
does
basically...
Does that affect the UCC analysis the district court judge did in any way?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because let me correct the answer to that. Under the agreement, certain parts of the product remain Myers, and then after it is fabricated and harvested, parts of it became Greater Omaha's. For example, we kept the hides, and we kept certain parts of the bones and other portions of it, pursuant to our contract. So I guess that begs the question, after it goes through the fabrication process, parts of it becomes Greater Omaha's pursuant to the contract. But here, the issue of insurance becomes one of...
So was this a service contract, or was this a contract for goods?
I think that it is a contract that where the UCC applies. I think that it has some portion of service, but we're also talking about goods. So therefore, I believe the Uniform Commercial Code provides. But specifically, Your Honor, this is an unambiguous contract. And the best evidence is that the parties worked under this for 5 years, and this came up on 75 different occasions, and we handled it pursuant to the contract, not how they're trying to do it in this case.
On those previous occasions, was there ever an insurance discussion?
Never. Never. And Your Honor, I believe that the district court, Judge Stratton's... Could I finish, Your Honor?
Okay.
I believe that Judge Stratman's interpretation of the party's agreement was spot on. They had a remedy. They used it for 5 years. On this last occasion, they decided to do something else. She entered summary judgment on behalf of Crater Home.
Am I missing the subtext here? Nobody would insure against this kind of thing?
Well...
For a reasonable amount of money?
I can assure you that had Meyer Natural Foods wanted a promise that there would be, that there would never be a positive E. coli test for cattle that they bring from their feedlots into our plant, that Mr. Davis never would have done business with them, because it's impossible to eradicate. And I think that goes to the issue of why the relief that they request here today is entirely inappropriate under this contract.
If this is a subrogation action by the insurance carrier for Myers, doesn't it suggest that that policy didn't have an exclusion for E. coli?
They have a completely different contract. I think that probably what, as I understand, and I know that there's testimony, I don't know how much of it went into the record because we took some depositions, they had a separate, completely separate policy of insurance with Crum and Forrester. It had different policy provisions. I think it might have been some type of products liability coverage that they purchased with Crum and Forrester, but on a completely separate contract, not the one that the parties agreed to in this case.
A different level?
Different. They had, Crum and Forrester was a completely different company.
But when that was in place, I guess, in terms of the layers, it was not in first position.
It had nothing to do with Greater Omaha.
Okay.
Meyer Natural Foods is a completely separate company, and they had purchased insurance company coverage from a completely different company for a completely different reason.
To clear up a factual question before you sit
yes.
down. When the
I'm hoping there's no factual questions here, Your Honor.
Right. When the meat was returned, well, when on the event day, the testimony is part of the meat was returned to the cookers. Whose cooker were they returned to?
Well, if I how it happens is
No. How it happened on that day.
Well, once
did they get returned to Greater Omaha?
No. Once they're put in the trailers, they're sealed. This happens at every processing facility in North America. Then they head to where they're going to be processed. Maybe they're going to make it into hamburger. The second they get notice of the E. coli testing, if there's a presumptive positive or a positive, all of those refrigerated trailers are diverted to, they make pepperoni or baby food. Anything where the meat is now cooked above 165 degrees.
Okay, so they were diverted on the event day.
To a completely different facility.
But not Greater Omaha owned.
No, there are companies, I mean, there's all kinds of companies that buy this and cook it and sell it. Most baby food contains product that has been cooked that might have, a lot of it comes from these types of facilities.
On the 75 other days you spoke of, were the diverted trucks also sent to those same alternative locations, or do they come back to Greater Omaha?
They never come back to Greater Omaha. They always go to, and Your Honor, Greater Omaha sells in every state, in the continental United States, so there could be cookers anywhere in the country where they happen to be going at the time they get the test results.
Are those cookers with contracts with Greater Omaha?
No, they're just...
So when the diversion occurs, who chooses where those diverted trucks are going?
Well, I think that there are salespeople who know companies who are looking for product. It could be, companies that make pepperoni or sausage.
No, in the agreement between Greater Omaha and Meyer, who made the determination where those diverted trucks are going?
I think that it is a determination that is likely made by the folks at Greater Omaha to try to get them the best price they can for meat that might have a presumptive positive.
In this situation, on the event day in question, who made the decision where those trucks are going?
To the best of my knowledge, Your Honor, I believe that decision would have been made by Greater Omaha, but it would have been done in the normal course and likely in consultation with Meyer Natural Foods to get them the best price. But in each and every one of those 75 occasions, because it's a naturally occurring phenomena, there was never a claim, because that just happens from time to time in this business.
So Meyer and Greater Omaha would have had to consult before those trucks were diverted on the event day?
Presumably, yes, Your Honor.
Is there a reduction in value when the meat gets shipped to the cooker?
Can be.
Who eats that expense?
Well, I think that, Your Honor, is what you're going to find is it's like any business where some days you get, 90% of its prime or 90% of its select. Other days, the cattle that you bring in don't grade as well. Since the E. coli is a naturally occurring phenomenon, it's basically kind of a risk of the business for any of these companies that do business in North America.
As long as you're here, let me ask you one more question. Is there a material question of fact as to whether or not the meat was returned to you?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And let me see if I could follow up on that.
You may.
Remember, you've got this 20-day window. We're dealing with fresh meat. And all of this information about the testing, where the product is, what's happened with it, it's all available within that 20 days. Had they exercised their remedy, we would have purchased 100% of the product had they asked us to do that. We did offer to rework the product, but it does not create a question of fact because the remedy remains the same. They could have returned it, and we would have given them 100% of it. We would have purchased it back from them. But they didn't exercise that remedy, and it was fatal to their claim.
Thank you. How much time do we have on rebuttal?
1 minute.
We will give you 3 minutes, Mr. Walker.
I appreciate that.
Excuse me.
May it please the court. A couple of things with regard to what I heard in the Appley's questioning. First, with regard to where was the product returned. In Exhibit 101, which is documentation of Meredith Carlson of Meyer Natural Foods, she states on April 29, 2011, box beef samples were sent over to Greater Omaha Packing for testing purposes. The order number was 97253.
So some was sent back for
correct.
Testing.
Okay.
But that's not all of them.
At least some, yes. Okay. Now, with regard to who makes the call on the cooker, the answer is Meyer Natural Foods. With regard to who puts the bill for the cooking expenses, Meyer Natural Foods. With regard to who accepts the reduced price for the reduced value of the meat after it's been cooked, Meyer Natural Foods. Those are damages. Those are questions of fact. Now, in the first round, we talked about insurance and the other provisions for which Meyer Natural Foods, or appellants for that matter, alleged breaches of the processing agreement. Insurance is in and of itself. In a breach of any other provision, the warranties, Section 10, what have you, constitute separate areas where appellants can recover in this action, irrespective of insurance, if they prove their action.
Now, based on the contract.
Based on the contract. Now, with regard to Section 10, which we argued vary the terms of the UCC and controls, because the UCC is only applicable to this agreement, not inconsistent with the terms, to the extent it's not inconsistent with the terms of this agreement.
Is this a sale of goods? Do you agree that the UCC?
Why would
the UCC apply?
I agree that it's close, okay? And I agree that that there's a lot of services here. I guess the parties did incorporate the UCC into it, so I steer on the side of caution when making this argument. But I do agree there's a significant amount of services to this that would prohibit any UCC application.
Seems it's mostly services, doesn't it?
I think that's fair. And in the first round, that is what we argued.
So what does that do to your argument here today?
Well, that would, if the UCC is inapplicable, then the provisions of the agreement govern.
And so you have a bunch of theories here.
A bunch of theories?
Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of provisions for which we believe there's a breach.
Okay.
Section 10. First off, we've told you, we believe there was acceptance. However, even if this court found there was no acceptance, the agreement, Section 10, continues and states, provided, however, even if there is acceptance, appellees are not relieved of their warranties. The express warranties given in that agreement, Section 15, included a warrant that the meat would not be adulterated, a warrant that the meat would be in compliance with law, a warrant that it would meet the specifications of Meyer Natural Foods, and a warrant that the meat would be fit for its intended purpose and free of defects. We all know that meat with E. coli on it is not fit for its intended purpose, which is consumption. Now,
did you have to avail yourself to the remedy in the contract, and did you do that?
Yes, because in the first round, we believe there was no acceptance because we gave notice in 20 days, okay? But
where's that in the record?
We argued the facts, and at a minimum, believe there's a fact issue on that
that we had numerous conversations with them, particularly the return on April 29 that I just disclosed to you of meat for more testing because we believe it has E. coli, showing that, hey, this is unacceptable. Now, keep in mind, at all times, the first person to know about the unacceptability of this meat was Applee, not us. They told us. And with regard to any application, I understand there's some question as to whether the UCC applies. 2-607, the prevailing law on that is that if the seller knows, assuming Applee was a seller, of the defect or of the breach, then no further notice is it need to be given. And in the reply brief, Applee argues that while that also applies to the breach of warranty claim, if we don't get notice, then there's also no breach of warranty, even if they're even after acceptance. That is not the rule. The rule, if you go down to the comments in 2-6073, states if the seller knows that the goods are troublesome, that is sufficient notice in and of itself. And we all know that was the case here. And in preparing for this oral argument, I found Williston on Contracts, the fourth edition, chapter 52, section 42, which states that the majority rule with respect to breach of warranties is that if the seller knows that the goods are troublesome, then no further notice is required and a breach of warranty action can be maintained. If the UCC applies like we're questioning, we would have a breach of warranty claim where we could recover under the UCC. If it doesn't apply, we can recover under the contract, which spells out our remedies. And for the record, there are a significant number of issues of fact as to whether GOPAC's negligence gave rise to this E. coli outbreak. Yes, cattle come in with E. coli, but the case law holds, and our experts say, that there wouldn't be, yes, once in a while there's one or two cattle with E. coli, and that's why no issue was raised on prior occasions and prior dealings between the party. But when you have 37 presumptive positives, which is the most Applee ever noticed, that's something different. That's going to cost. You have to make an issue of that. The damages we've shown you are $1.4 million. And
is that the difference between the prior 75 incidents and this incident? Was just the volume?
Correct. Correct. If there, if there's one or the 75 incidents were not one incident. That's a cumulative of numerous incidents. And if there's one, two, three pieces, no big deal. When there's 37 presumptive positives and it's going to cause $1.4 million in damages, that's a little different. And ultimately, we've shown you that there was poor record keeping. There was knife sanitation violations, three of them within 5 days of the event day, and there was an improper surface for cleaning the carcass to prevent E. coli from manifesting to the cattle. These are all issues of fact as to whether these items and what particular item caused the E. coli outbreak in its processing. And the case law we cited to you states that after processing, E. coli will not manifest itself on meat in the absence of negligence. And our expert, Dr. Marsden, said, referred to this whole thing as a general process failure. Well, there is an issue of fact as to what specific process failed. As such, judges, we would ask that you reverse the order of summary judgment in favor of Applee and grant the motion for reverse the order denying our motion for partial summary judgment, remand it with instructions to grant that motion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next